The desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul. We each have an inherent wish to create something that did not exist before. The more you trust and rely upon the Spirit, the greater your capacity to create.
I'm Nancy Hansen, and this is Everything Creative. This program explores a wide range of creative ideas, talents, and experiences through interviews and group discussions. Welcome to Everything Creative. I'm Nancy Hansen, and today our discussion is with a group of gentlemen involved in the world of animation. Joining me in the studio are Ryan Woodward, Jake Parker, David Dibble, Tyler Carter, and on the phone from Connecticut, Moroni Taylor. Thank you guys for all being here today.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks
for having us.
There's so much involved in the making of an animated film and so much that I'm curious about and I'm sure our listeners don't know about, so I'm excited about this discussion. I'm going to let each of you kind of introduce yourselves and give us a brief idea of where you work now and what it is that you do. And let's go ahead and start with you, Tyler.
All right. Well, I'm a student at BYU, and I'm in my senior year now, working on a film that we should finish in December. And, yeah, then I do visual development.
Okay, great. David?
I work for Blue Sky Studios in Connecticut, and I am a color key artist, is what that's called, kind of a background painter of sorts, and we'll talk more about the specifics later, but that's what I do.
Great, and you're just here visiting in Utah.
Right, yeah, I grew up on a farm in Layton, so we came back to see the farm and conference for the weekend.
Nice. Thanks for making this part of your trip. Okay. And Ryan?
I'm Ryan Woodward, and I currently teach at Brigham Young University in the animation program. And I still like to keep my other foot in Hollywood films, and just finished up a film recently called Cowboys and Aliens, coming out next year.
Nice. Jake Parker.
Yeah, I'm Jake Parker, and I've been at Blue Sky the last 5 years. I just quit on Friday to pursue my own career, self-employed.
Wow. So you just moved out here?
Just moved out here. And the reason I moved out here is I was asked to teach at BYU in the winter semester. So I'll be teaching art out there.
Awesome. And Moroni Taylor.
I work at Blue Sky with Dave Dibble. And Jake used to anyway. I've lived out in Connecticut for about 10 years. I worked for a couple other studios before coming here. Used to work with Ryan Woodward years ago.
Oh, so you're all kind of connected. I'd like to talk for a second about the path that got you all where you are today. If this is something that you knew you were going to go to school for from the beginning, if when you were little, this is, you know, your dream, and maybe just the steps that it took to get you each where you are on the path of your profession right now. Tyler, why don't we start with you?
Yeah. Well, I think it all started, like, in high school. I was really interested in art, and I was playing a lot of soccer. So I was actually planning on going and doing something with soccer for a while, at least trying to go to college. And I got injured my senior year of high school, and that changed things quite a bit. I saw a show on TV about the BYU animation program. Hmm. So I went out there and met one of the professors. And then after I got home from my mission, I just prepared a portfolio and I got in, and it kind of started from there.
So what about, you're an artist?
Yeah, I'm an artist.
And did you, I mean, when you prepare, you say you prepare a portfolio and you're just home from your mission, you know, what, had you taken art classes? Were you just naturally gifted?
I had been drawing a lot. I definitely was really inexperienced. I didn't really know what to do. I talked a lot to Ryan, actually, preparing my portfolio. At BYU, what they were looking for is a portfolio with figure drawings and a sample of 2D animation, like Little Mermaid, like old Disney animation was done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what was in the portfolio. And so I, you know, spent basically every single day working on that nonstop. Didn't have a social life for a little while. And it was worth it, though. You know, good things came out of it. The next year, I got an internship at Disney Feature Animation. And then the year after that, I was able to go to Pixar able to work on some of the upcoming films.
Great experiences.
Yeah, it was amazing and really humbling.
Yeah, I'm sure. That is so cool. Okay, I want to come back and talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
Dave, what about you?
Oh, goodness. I think like most of us, my path was quite circuitous, actually. It wasn't a straight line at all.
Circuitous?
And, yeah.
What does circuitous mean?
Like a circuit, a circle, comes from the same word, not straight.
I was like, okay.
So,
got it.
Impressive.
Anyway,
smart.
You know, grew up on a farm and loved that and worked at Boy Scout camps for a lot of years of my life. And then growing up, I think a lot of people would say, when you said, I want to be an artist, they would say, that's fine for a hobby, but what are you really going to do for your work? You can't support a family on that. And so I ended up looking at some other options. And finally, it was in college that my mom sat me down and said, you've been given this gift for a reason and you need to follow this and see where it goes. And so I went into art full time in college and enjoyed it a lot, but it went to BYU and Weber State, a few other schools, and finally ended up out in San Francisco doing graduate school out there in art and doing more gallery painting and landscapes and figures and things like that. And thought that that was going to be my career path. And I'd taken a load of paintings to the gallery, art gallery, some in California, some here. And then my wife and I moved out to New York to do graduate school for my wife in dance. And then when we got out there, suddenly a few months later, the world economy very much shifted and changed. And nobody was buying paintings in galleries. And that's partly because of the financial situation and probably part because of my paintings. But they weren't selling. And suddenly we had to have rent and there needed to be some way to support ourselves. And so there were a few members of the ward who worked at Blue Sky Studios in animation. They said, why don't you bring your portfolio in? And I had never considered animation work. In fact, had thought, well, I'm not going to do the film route. And then suddenly I came back a half an hour later after meeting with the studio and sending my portfolio in and thought, that's really great. That's something that could really work. So for me, it was a big, it was a miracle that I was able to get that job and have been able to work there. And oddly enough, I've learned more about art than I at Blue Sky and working in film than I ever would have on my own doing my own gallery painting. And I'm further ahead in my gallery painting than I would have been otherwise. And it was also a big lesson spiritually of how the Lord sometimes closes doors to open others, how I wouldn't have been ready to have that opportunity and to consider it had not those doors closed.
Yeah, such a good point. So you still do your other gallery work?
I do, at night and weekends.
So you kind of consider that a hobby?
I guess. An extension of my day job.
Exactly. So. That's great. Ryan, let's see what kind of big words you can use.
Well, my life has also been circuitous, in a very circuitous way. Now, I started in the industry in 95, started at Warner Brothers Animation. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to draw. It was either comic books or it was animation or something. But I knew drawing was what I wanted to do.
You were the kid that sat in Sacrament Meeting and drew.
I'm the kid with the notes, report cards. It says, Ryan doesn't pay any attention to what I'm saying. He draws too much. That's what it says literally.
Still draws in Sacrament Meeting.
Yeah. Still draws in Sacrament. That's true. But my kids draw in conference, too. It's just kind of nice. But I left Rick's College and then applied for an internship at Warner Brothers in 95, and that's kind of where it all started. It was a training program that they had going there. It was really nice. We got in there, and for 3 months they trained us on lots of different aspects of the animation industry. And this is all prior to the big 3D boom. You know, everything was very traditional and hand drawn. And so,
what year was that?
The 3D boom.
Know that you were there.
95.
95. Okay.
Yeah, when I started, after the training program, they put us on our first production, which was Space Jam, and so that's where I kind of got my feet wet on that film. And stayed with that company for about 7 years or so, and worked on The Iron Giant and Osmosis Jones and a bunch of small projects in development. In fact, Maro and I, you remember Uncle Louie? Remember working on that one together? That was fun. We got
to
work.
I was just looking at that tape the other day.
Were you? Yeah, we worked on a fun project in development, TV development, called Uncle Louie, which was really fun. And then I left the animation industry for a while. Went and did live action storyboards, and did the Spider-Man films, and Where the Wild Things Are, and recently Iron Man 2, and then Cowboys and Aliens, and a few other smaller ones in there. But in 2003, the bug for teaching kind of got me, and I enjoyed. I actually was teaching early morning seminary. And out in California, and I liked it so much, the teaching aspect of it, I started looking at teaching animation, something that I actually really enjoy for a living. And there was a position, the BYU Animation was brand new, it was only a year old, and there was a position open, and I thought, oh, what the heck, I'll go see what it's all about. And
oh, wow.
And I got lucky, I guess, and started teaching there in 2003, and that's where I've been since 2003.
Wow, so, I mean, almost just a big switch from what you used to be doing. Do you still, well, you did mention that you still work on films and keep yourself in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the nice thing about the school is for faculty, they expect us to stay current in our disciplines. And so there's my teaching expectations, but then they expect us to be current in what we do. And so that's why there's time allotted to go work on films and work on my own short films at times, my own personal projects. And
nice.
It works out okay.
Great. Marone, tell us your story.
Well, I always wanted to get into animation. My dad used to work for Universal when I was a kid, and he wanted to be an animator but didn't quite make it, so he always encouraged me. And I can't remember a time not knowing what I wanted to do and always strove for it. So I'm actually getting my first job at Warner Brothers was like the realization of my childhood dreams.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Ryan Woodward. He and I were in the same ward together. We worked at the same place. And a little bit different, I was thought I would be an animator when I was a kid, and I got to school and I was focusing on that. And then the summer between my junior and senior year, I was about to get married. I was desperate for a job. And so I was putting my portfolio out there at every studio that would even give me 2 seconds of their time. And I was working on my student film, which is a very ambitious 5-minute film. Of course, I never finished it, but I had a bunch of storyboards. So the studio looked at it, this one studio called Hyperion. They did a couple sequels to The Brave Little Toaster. And they said, oh, you do storyboards? And I said, oh, yes, I totally do storyboards. And they're like, great, you're hired. So I spent the summer storyboarding a couple of sequels. And by the time I was done with that and got back to school the next year, I switched my focus and said, forget animation. I'm doing storyboarding. This is my true calling, is what I love. So I went forward with that, and then I got hired at Warner Brothers as a storyboard artist, and been doing that ever since.
And if you see Moroni's storyboards, it truly is his calling. He's brilliant at it.
It's his thing, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe we should take a little stop for a minute and talk about what a storyboard is for those of our listeners who don't know about that.
Well, a storyboard is similar to a comic book in that you're drawing one picture that explains a certain part of the movie. Although we don't draw it in a comic book style where there's several panels on a page, this is one drawing per page. It's usually in the format of the screen ratio, like what you're looking at a TV or a movie screen.
Okay.
And the storyboard artist will come up with dialogue and bits of action that the characters do. We usually follow a script. In my case, I tend to be a little more unique. They always give me stuff that hasn't been scripted. So I enjoy that because that means I get to make stuff up.
Yeah.
And so the storyboard artist's job is to be the first one to visualize the movie. The drawings that we do are kind of like a blueprint for the movie. And then from there, it goes to other people who will take our rough storyboard sketches. If you look at them, they're not like a beautiful finished drawing, but basically a sketch to get across an emotion or an idea or some right. mood as to what's going on, and certainly give a clue as where the camera could be, what kind of camera angle. We're not always focused on the camera angles, mostly on getting a story point across. But there's times when the camera supports what's going on, and you got to figure that out too.
So are there, do several people, I don't know if submit's the right word, but are there different people that are sketching storyboards for the same film just to get ideas, or is it just like, okay, this is yours and we're going to use whatever you come up with? How does that work?
Well, there is, the director will take a look at what I do. On most films, the story department is rather small. There's usually between 8 to 10 artists, as opposed to animators, there's like 50 or 60 of them on a movie, sometimes more. So a typical day would be when we're handed an assignment. My strength happens to be gags or jokes, as they're called sometimes, and and so they'll give me a scene and say, hey, oh, for example, on Ice Age 1, the first Ice Age, we had the scene with the dodos in it, and Sid had to get this fruit from them. So I said, all right, Marona, here, we've been struggling with the scene. It hasn't quite come out, so take it and do whatever you want. See what comes out of it. So I started working on it, and there was another guy who worked with me, and we sat down over the weekend and kind of completely rethought the whole thing and showed it to the director, and they really liked it. And we had to pitch it to him. We pinned up all the storyboards on these 4x8 sheets of cork, and we'd hold a stick and point to the drawing and say what's going on, and sometimes do a little bit of acting, put on a goofy voice. It's like putting on a show, but just for the director and a few other people. And then they either say, oh, I love it, you're a genius, or, oh, you're an idiot. Go come up with something else. I don't like it. And that's kind of what my typical day is. I'll get something, I'll storyboard it, work on it, then show it. They'll say yay or nay, or we like this part but not that part, and you got to go back and change it a bit. And then it just moves forward down the pipeline to the next people who work on it and until it becomes the final animation.
You know, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It can be stressful sometimes, but Sure. Generally it's a lot of fun.
Well, good. Hey, Jake, let's hear from you. Jake
All right.
Parker.
I wouldn't say it was circuitous, but it was curlicuitous, my pathway here. Like Ryan, I was a kid drawn in Sacrament. I was a kid drawn in school, getting the report cards, all that. There really was no other alternative for me because I wasn't good at anything else. I had to do something with art. Took some art classes before my mission, returned home from my mission, and got right back into school. And I had an art teacher from high school that said, you know, there's an animation studio in Phoenix. I grew up in Arizona. There's an animation studio in Phoenix. You should just put your stuff together, put a portfolio together, send it off to them, see if, you know, if they have a job for you, if there's something that you can do there. And I did it. And sure enough, they had a low-level animation job for me to do. And so the choice was in front of me. Do I take this job in animation or do I finish out, you know, these classes at school? And I decided to just go for it and take the job. Mm. And I was doing in-between drawings, which when animated movies were hand-drawn, the animator would draw keyframes. So he'd draw, you know, the first pose, and then he'd draw the second pose, and then he'd hand off the rest of it to the in-betweener, and I'd draw all the different drawings that go in between.
Really?
Right. So wow. It was really cool to have that job there at an animation studio, but I soon realized I didn't like animating. it was tedious. But the thing that most impressed me was, and it was like what David was saying, you know, there was a big concern, you know, am I able to support a family doing this? Can I earn a living doing this? And here was this studio of 300 people all supporting families, supporting, you know, certain lifestyles, and that it was an actual viable career choice. Mm-hmm. So that definitely opened it up to me. And I learned from there that I wanted to go into more of the design aspect of things. That animation studio closed. They laid everybody off and they shut it down. And it was run by Fox. And ironically, the reason they shut down the Phoenix studio was because they wanted to put all of their money into the Connecticut studio, which was Blue Sky.
Oh, okay.
Which I ended up at another 5 years later. So in between then, I did a bunch of different odd art jobs, graphic design. I worked for a museum designing dinosaur exhibits. I did video game stuff, everything in between, and it all kind of helped me get to where I was at Blue Sky, doing the design work. And to tie it in with what Moroni was saying, I pick up where Moroni leaves off. So he would design a character in an office answering the phone, right? Or he would draw that in his storyboard. I would figure out, what does that office look like? What does this phone look like? And I'd come up with, you know, 50 different concept drawings for it, or 10 different ones, show those to the directors and the art director, and they would figure out, yes, we like this design of the phone. And then my designs would then go through the rest of the pipeline to get made and put into the actual movie. So,
wow. Nancy, if I can jump in there.
Yeah.
I kind of take it from where Jake has done it sometimes, and I'll get that drawing that Jake has done, and then the art director will tell me, okay, it's in the morning, we've got light coming through the window, and they're about to get a phone call, and they're going to light the phone. And so then I'll do a painting of that, and that will go down to inform people who are building it in the computer how to light it and how to set up the scene.
Wow, so I'm getting the idea that this is just this is why it takes so long to make these these films, like a full-length feature film. How long do you spend on something like that?
Well, I was hired at Blue Sky Studios 2 years ago and started working on a film called Rio, which will come out next year, and I'm still working on the same film. So two and a half, 3 years.
I was on that well before he was on it for a couple of years. And roughly 4 years, I would say, to finish an animated film. And it's just because everything needs to be designed and created for the film, because none of it exists. You know, if you're shooting a live action film, you have a set with a door and a light switch and a screw on the, you know, light switch, and it's just there.
Yeah.
But in an animated film, all of that has to be created and has to be drawn and designed. So there's lots of details that have to be figured out and made for it. So,
and because everything is driven by the story, so often there will be changes in story that then take the whole train, stop it, and put it on another track. So often I'll do something and then Moroni will come up with a new idea suddenly. And the work I'd done for weeks gets thrown away and they say, oh, actually, it's now snowing instead of morning light.
Wow.
And so then we go back and repaint the whole thing and redo it.
And you just know that's going to be part of the process.
Right.
Yeah, or else that could be really frustrating.
Yeah.
See, that's why I got into story. I could do the simple drawings to tell everybody else what to do.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Everything Creative. We're talking today with a group of animators talking about how animated films come to be. And it's just such a curious process for those of us who just go and sit in the theater and we watch and we enjoy. And I just love to – it's amazing to me just how real these little characters look and their personalities and all the nuances that make them come to be. And often I don't think about all those behind the scenes things. How is it for you guys when you go see any kind of animated film? You just don't look at it the same, right?
For me, I enjoy it on so many different more levels now than when I was a kid. You know, it was all a lot about the story as a kid, but now it's the craft. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm watching it to see, you know, how these guys actually made it and all the time and effort that goes into it.
Sure.
And the nice thing, there's been lately all these movies that come out have these art books that go along with it. And you didn't get this before. And these art books show all the behind the scenes work done for these. And so I'll get those books and look at everything that's drawn and all the different designs that went into creating this character. And that just makes this movie much more appealing to me and much, you know, broader experience than just watching, you know, the story unfold.
And it must be inspiring, just like, you know, if I go to a concert, I'm just more inspired to write and perform and just mm-hmm. is that how you feel?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Go home and draw right afterwards.
Any other comments?
Well, my wife probably gets sick of me pulling her in the middle of a movie and saying, hey, look at the color on this. Did you see the intensity, or the saturation of that red? And she's like, just watch the movie, honey.
It's funny.
That's true.
Well, Ryan, maybe this question should be directed towards you. Talk to us a little bit about the history of animation. We all know if you've been to Disneyland or Disney World and you kind of get to see that early, I mean, that's what we all think of, I think, when it comes to animation. Talk to us about how it's progressed and developed over time.
I'll try and make this into something entertaining and not like a history lesson, right?
Or, yeah, right.
Audience is going to fall asleep. But I think the most of the public knows who Walt Disney is. And I guess the common thought out there, you know, he is the father of animation, right? At least of how we see it today. And it's interesting when you look at his life. He was raised in a small town. He had no opportunity really to do what he wanted to do before him. He had a very oppressive father who didn't really give him the opportunity to do what he wanted, but he had a vision. And every time that vision got knocked down, every time an idea got stolen from him, every time his artist walked away from him, he never sunk his head down and decided, all right, I'm going to go be a salesman now. He never did that. He was always, well, I'm going to step it up now and we're going to make the cartoons color. You know, and he always had a new invention, a new idea. Yeah. And it was that kind of visionary that he was that that every film he did created, you know, these new technical innovations. It brought people together. I mean, Mickey Mouse was like an icon of World War II.
Yeah.
And so thanks to Walt Disney, he not only established that empire of all those wonderful classic films like Sleeping Beauty and Robin Hood and Snow White and all
right,
those.
Yeah, yeah.
But he established a persona of somebody that the qualities you need to survive in this industry, and that is a clean, clear vision of what you want to do and who you want to be. You have to have that. If you don't, you're just a cog in the giant machine and working in an assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at Walt and his life, it inspires you and it makes you want to be like that, and it makes you want to create and have your own ideas. And that, to me, that's the most important history of Walt, instead of, well, you know, Sleeping Beauty was released in 1936 and,
yeah,
and you get all those factual numbers. It's the personality of those visionaries and how they overcome all the huge roadblocks that they had, and look what they achieved. And I think I like to talk about this with my students a lot too, because those roadblocks still exist today. And if you think of yourself as a Walt Disney, as a visionary, and you think to yourself, well, what technical innovations haven't even been thought of yet? You know, what stories have never been invented?
Right.
What amazing universes and landscapes and worlds and characters have never been thought of yet? Well, if Walt was alive, he'd be coming up with them. And it's pretty neat to think that we actually have that creative power inside our brains to come up with that. But we've got to be that visionary type.
And that never give up kind of attitude. Yeah.
Yeah.
So back then, I mean, wasn't it almost like, hey, draw each little frame and flip the page? And so you can, I mean, that's how they did it back then, right?
Yeah, everything, it was 24 frames per second. And everything was hand-drawn. The cells were hand-painted on the back. Backgrounds were painted by hand. They had an enormous camera system called an Oxberry camera that they would shoot it on that had really hot lights. And it was an amazing feat to get those films done back then.
Yeah.
100 times the amount of work. Then the technology we have now just makes it so much. I wouldn't say easier, because you're still coming up with really more even technical problems, right? But they were creating processes that had no pathway before them. They were creating processes that were just out of their head. They were amazing individuals.
Wow. That is pretty inspiring. I want to talk about so we've talked a little bit about the process and how we kind of started with the storyboard, and then, I mean, can you just keep continuing to take us? We're only at the point now where you're talking about the lighting, right? Okay, where do we go from here?
Well, there's also the character side too. I mean, that's one of the main pieces of the film. It's not just the background and the color. It's the characters. And these animators will take these storyboards and they'll see, okay, here's the action that happens in it. Here's the humor that this character is trying to portray. And they animate the characters in 3D, basically. And what happens is, just like the set, like I was talking about, is designed and sent through all this pipeline where it's colored, the characters also go through the same thing. So the character is designed on paper first. It's sent through another department called the modeling department, and they model the character in the computer. It's kind of like sculpting with clay, but digitally. So now this character is 3D, exists in 3D space inside the computer.
Now, the people that do this, are they artists or?
They are artists. And that's the really cool thing about, I think, animated films today and these 3D films today, is because you get a lot of people who wouldn't be able to work in animation 10 or 20 years ago. They're creative, but they may not be able to draw very well, but they are very creative in that they understand color, and they understand textures and relationships and patterns and these types of things. And all these characters need this artistic eye throughout the whole process. Yeah. And so a lot of the modelers at Blue Sky, they actually do sculpt traditionally with their hands, and they apply what they know there into sculpting in the computer. Once the character is modeled, there's a rigging department, and what they do are they put bones basically in this character. They make it poseable, able to move. And from that point on, the animators are actually able to then take these modeled, rigged characters and position them in the poses that they need to do, and animate them, have them act the way they need to act. After that's done, there's the rendering, where it's actually taken from these hard wireframe, crisp characters to what you see on the screen with the fur on them or the skin and the textures on them.
And then is that a completely different, almost, I don't know, the word department or just...
It's all, yeah, they're all
okay.
These
so it's
different
just moving
departments.
Down the line.
Mm-hmm. I'd say the farther down the line you get, the more technical things are.
Mm-hmm.
There's still an artistic side to it, but these guys are really dealing with, how to get this, computer to make something look real and lifelike.
Yeah.
So
Marone, when he talked about doing storyboards and then, I mean, are you working on the same project for years, or do you move on to something else as these guys are?
The story is first one out generally, because you got to have a story for all the rest of the stuff to come on the screen for. If you don't have a story, it doesn't matter how awesome the paintings
True.
Are or anything else. Everyone's like, okay, great, next. I'm not currently working on the same project as Dave is now. I'm working on the next one that comes out. And so the story part of it's usually first, because that informs
right.
everything else. Something else I'd say about what Jake was saying a minute ago about, I think it was Jake, 3D. The computer now has made it so that animated films can be just like a live-action film as far as, like, what you can do with the camera. Years ago with 2D, it was really difficult to have a camera rotate around in 3D space because you'd have to animate the background, which is a crazy thing to do by hand. But now with the computer, you can do anything that a live action can do and more, because with animation, you're creating every single frame and have complete control over it. And so our stories can be more involved now with computer animation that we couldn't do in the past. But there was some super cool camera thing you wanted to do, like a super long zoom out, you can do it now. Whereas in the past, it would just require too much drawings to make it worth it.
Yeah.
And so the computers, while it's not so much doing our work for us, it's like a big fancy pencil that you can do so much more with now. And it's still a ton of work, as being said earlier. Not that it's easier, it's just more complicated in some areas, but in other areas, it does make it easier.
Yeah, and so many more possibilities.
Right. And yeah. I think the whole, part of what Ryan was saying about Walt Disney getting up, after he's knocked down and getting to it, that's a quality of, I think, all of us. We've all been hit and had to get up and move again. But another huge thing, and part of the appeal for me with animated films, is collaboration. You can't make one of these movies all by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It takes teamwork, and it involves working with several different departments and other people, and everybody working together, making this, this movie or this film is just, it's a wonderful experience. You make friendships, you sort of put your faith and trust into other departments and other people, because you can't have your control over everything. At some point, you have to pass your, you know, yeah, your piece of it on to someone else. So there's the trust thing there as well. No, that's a huge part of the appeal for me.
And I think probably Tyler is learning that now in school, in that you aren't just one thing. That you start out in school sometimes thinking, oh, I'm going to be an artist, and yet it's about learning to do a lot of things and juggle, and you get into the industry and suddenly you are doing a lot of things, and the more you can do, the more versatile you are.
Yeah, and on the topic of like collaboration, I think one of the biggest things that I've learned at school is learning to communicate with other people and collaborate with them in order to get the product that you want. Like Jake and Ryan and Dave are talking about these things that they do early in the pipeline in animation. Those act as like a reference for the rest of the film that everyone else on the film has to use to match what that looks like. And I'm directing a short film over at BYU right now, and it's been a really long learning process. We've been working on it for almost 2 years now, and that would go a little bit faster if everyone was getting paid. And
sure,
you know, but it's a full-time volunteer job, and because of that, it just involves, you know, how do you get someone to do something for free for you and do it for 2 years? It's pretty hard, and the motivation is that we all want to get jobs and go out and work in the
right
animation industry, but it's a huge collaboration effort of communication, working together, being patient with each other, and just supporting each other when you're doing it. And I think that's prepared me more than anything, just that, all the failed attempts, and we have failed a lot. I mean, you can ask Ryan. Ryan's seen like probably 20 different animatics. An animatic is like all the storyboards put together. So, you know, after Moroni has drawn everything, they'll put it together like a little moving movie.
Okay.
Maybe with some music and sound. And, you know, Ryan's seen a lot of iterations of that. And you have to have tough skin, you know, because people are just going to tell you yay or nay, it's working or it's not. Like Moroni was saying, if the director likes it or not.
But Tyler's got the tough skin, which is good. We we like to be really hard on these guys and let them know on a professional level how they're doing and the decisions they're making. And sometimes sometimes it'll bring tears out in some of the students, and sometimes they'll buck up and say, you're right, I'm going to make some changes, and here we go. And Tyler's been great at that. That's why I really think his film that's going to be coming out – oh, we're not supposed to plug anything, are we? His film that's going to be coming out is going to be brilliant. It's going to be really brilliant.
I think that's good, though, that you do, you know, kind of toughen the student's skin, because that is
– that's the real world for them.
It's the real world. You know, if you're not doing what they want, they'll move on to someone else.
Well, and that's hard with creativity because it's something that, you know, didn't exist before that you're bringing to the table, and it's your – I mean, you're just laying yourself right out there to be ripped apart, and that's
– Well, and that's the point of life, really, is that we're not perfect in one moment. We're not done, that it's a process of creating and then reevaluating and critiquing and then making changes where they need to be made. And that's the same in our art that we do, that you can't just say, oh, this is the perfect painting, I'm done. If we did the perfect painting, we'd be done, and we wouldn't have any need to do anything else. And yet it's that constant search for improvement in our own lives and in our work that keeps us going.
There's also an attribute that a lot of artists have, which can be kind of dangerous, is that we like to associate our work with who we are. And so when our work is accepted, somehow we feel like, okay, then I'm accepted and I'm a valuable person. And when our work is not accepted, we like to say just the opposite. Well, I guess I'm not a valuable person. And then it kind of debilitates the artist a little bit. And worst case scenario, the artist stops doing creative work. And then in their mind, they actually stop existing. They stop becoming a person. It's a blessing and a curse to be a creative artist.
It is.
And but you have to – over the years, you start to develop that separation. Like, I am this individual. I am this person. And I create this work. And trying to keep those two separate so that when your work is not accepted, it doesn't put you down in your pillow sobbing all night.
Yeah,
because
such a good point.
It does do that in the beginning. And there's a few stories I've got where my pillow is taking all my tears.
Well, yeah. I think that's the process of school, right, is being able to develop technical skills and understand art technically, and then being able to be able to separate that a little bit so that you can critique it and realize that, oh, even though maybe my composition's off, my personal composition is still okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that. So, Tyler, when you listen to these guys talking about their jobs, and I mean, where do you see yourself? What would be your dream situation years ahead?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be graduating in April, so okay. I'm just – my dream is just to be able to go back out into a big studio and get a job. That would be a dream. It's – you know, and I think the two internships that I have, if they did anything – they just humbled me and told me that I had a long way to go, but there were jobs out there for what I wanted to do in art and in design. And so, yeah, I mean, it was a dream walking through the Disney studio. Like the first time walking in there every day, I'd look at those gates and say, whoa,
yeah.
this is a dream. And how am I going to get myself back here? And some advice that was given to me while I was there was go make a movie. Like, that's what we do at these studios. Mm-hmm. Go make a movie, and that's going to help you get back in. And so that's kind of driven me to the point where I'm at right now.
Yeah, that's what keeps you going.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of support from the faculty at BYU, Ryan, other faculty members. It's, you know, they serve as inspiration to the students. And, you know, as someone who's trying to obey the commandments and do all these things at the same time, you know, you listen to General Conference and you're trying to do all those at the same time as being an artist. I think being an artist is a very consuming job, and I think these guys would agree it is. It's more of a lifestyle. I think Ryan says that it's a lifestyle that you become, and you know, making sure that you're balancing your life is a huge challenge. So, to me, being able to get that dream job is just going out to one of those studios, being able to support my family. And, you know, being happy doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's good advice, though, what he was saying. They told you to go make a movie,
yeah.
Right? And I know, like, I get questions from a lot of people, whether it's someone who wants to be a children's book illustrator or, you know, to go into animated films, or they want to draw comics or whatever. And, you know, they say, I just don't know what to do. I don't know how to get into this. And that's what I always tell them. Well, you want to make children's books, go make a children's book. It
yeah.
may not be great.
Yeah.
You know, it may really stink, but you've made it and you've learned from it. And I think that's, you know, if you're a creative type, if you're an artist, you're going to create. And you're gonna do that. And if you're not doing that, then you should be, you know, whether it's in school or whether it's on your own time after work or whatever the case may be, you carve out a little time to create and to make something that wasn't there before. And over time, as you continue to do that, it'll get better, and you'll have a greater grasp and an understanding of what you want to get into, whether it's painting. I know David still paints on the side. And I think a lot of us who work at these studios, we do these pet projects and we have these things on the side. Because the studio does sort of feed the creative beast somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you are working on someone else's vision,
right.
Someone else's project. And so we all like to, I think, I'll speak for all of us, we do like to do our own things, our own projects, and that helps to get those creative juices flowing and to keep you fresh and keep you vitalized.
Yeah, it's great. Such good advice.
Guys in the design studio often quote a famous artist who said something to the effect of, everybody has 10,000 bad drawings in them, so the sooner you can get those bad drawings out, the sooner you can get onto the good stuff.
That's right.
So it's just about practice, really. It's
yeah.
not just that you wake up and suddenly are this person. It was the same on your mission, right? You think, oh, if I could just be like those guys that are going home. But you don't wake up and become that missionary. You make
yeah.
that choice every day to be who we want to be. And you draw and you paint and you practice. And then in time, the Lord will help you become what you need to be if you're consistent and humble and diligent in what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you.
Along those lines, too, what Jake was saying is that we have this this creative beast in us. Right, and sometimes we get really attached to our work in the studio, and when we're working on a film, and we can get too attached to it to the point where we get emotionally attached to it, and it can affect us emotionally when we return home. And we bring that with us. Mm. It's in our minds, and we can go home to our families, and it's still there, and we can be – it can cause tension, right? And that's why Jake was saying we got to have our outlets, our own personal yeah. creative outlets. If you don't have that as an artist, sometimes that lack of being able to express yourself in other creative outlets will eat you alive, and it'll cause you to be a little unsettled as an artist. And those little outlets are the things that also keep you consistently growing in other areas, because mm-hmm. you'll get pigeonholed sometimes in the studio and you'll do the same job over and over and over. But then when you get to go home and work on your own personal project, you're learning a whole different side to the industry or a whole different application, and then you get that sense of satisfaction that I'm learning still. And as an artist, if you ever lose that feeling like you're not learning anymore,
yeah.
you get stagnant, that's a perfect recipe for frustration.
Yeah, absolutely. This applies to any type of creativity. Well said. Maroon, I want to give you a chance to weigh in here if you wanted to about anything.
Oh, just along the lines of that doing a personal project, I'm a big fan of that. Working on these movies is a lot of fun, but sometimes you're just like, ugh. They just picked the stupidest ideas I came up with. I can't believe they did that. But, you know, everyone has their own opinion. And so it is very good to go home and just do something else, do something that only you are in charge of. And as they've said earlier about students that want to get into this stuff, it may sound like the silliest advice ever, but if you want to be an animator or a storyboard or whatever, then do some storyboards. Make yourself a movie. Get some paper, draw on it, take a picture of it with your digital camera, put it in your computer, and start putting them together if that's the most rudimentary way you can do it. Just make something happen. That article that you had sent out from Iller Uchtdorf, he didn't limit creativity to just artists. He just said everybody can be creative.
Yeah.
And he talked about it. Whatever it is, your interest, cooking or something. You made the awesomest sandwich ever. Or whatever it is you do.
It's true, yeah.
Make something that's creative. Make the world a better place than it was a few minutes ago before you decide to create something.
Absolutely.
And something that's really great for people today with the internet and all these, like YouTube and these other distribution channels, if you want to call them that. When I was a kid, if I made a movie, I could probably get about 5 or 6 people to look at it. My brothers and sisters, my mom and dad, and they go, oh, that's great, and pat me on the head. But now you can make something, you can post it online, and if you're lucky enough, millions of people can look at it. And they can say stuff to you like, that's stupid, or that's awesome. And people will say anything.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's fun to get feedback like that. It's fun to create something, put it out there online, and have people look at it. And so it's a huge opportunity to any creative person now to have their work seen by a complete stranger, someone they've never met before, don't know, or never probably will meet.
Yeah, and you can almost just be anonymous. You don't have to stand there and watch their reaction. You know, you put it out there and wait to see what happens. We're talking on Everything Creative today about animation, and I wanted to ask you how you feel like being LDS, affects your work and how you deal with that being in the industry.
I have a bit of a unique situation since my name is Moroni.
Yeah.
It automatically nails me. That's a weird name. What is that? It's like, well, it's a Mormon name. And so I have the unique opportunity to tell, you know, most people know me. As soon as they get to know me, they immediately find out I'm Mormon. And there is a certain expectation there. A lot of people are like, oh, you can't drink Coca-Cola, right? Oh, yeah, I don't do that. Or whatever it is, coffee or something. And I've noticed that my coworkers actually treat me a little differently than they treat each other because, like, oh, Moroni's got different standards, so be cool. Don't do that kind of stuff around him. Another thing I find interesting, and a lot of times in our story meetings, just all kinds of jokes are thrown out. A lot of them are bad, meaning like off-color things just shouldn't be, and everybody laughs,
right.
Oh, ha, ha, that's funny. Of course, we would never, hopefully, never put something like that in the movie, but now and then something pops up that's just a little, like, not quite right. And so I'll speak up and say, rather than just shooting it down, I'll come up with try and come up with better ideas, I'll say, well, I don't think that idea or that joke is the best. Here's some other ideas. What do you think of this?
Yeah, that's good.
So rather than just being a negative voice against something that I feel would be a negative influence, I'll try to come up with other positive things to replace it with.
Yeah, that's good. And you've obviously earned the respect of these people so that, you know, they give you room to say something like that.
Most of the time they do. Sometimes they're like, no, dude, we're putting this in. I don't care what you say.
Who cares?
But I've tried. You know, I voiced my concern on something.
And, you know, I think you being in story, Moroni, you're in a position where you can influence those kind of things a little bit more than, say, David or I myself. I mean, if there's off-color stuff in David's situation, it's usually because it's the wrong color. But yeah, I just want to add, too, when I came to Blue Sky, I decided that I would be openly Mormon, you know. And in the past, I would kind of...
Out of the closet.
Huh? Yeah, basically, out of the closet. And, you know, people would say, oh, how was your weekend, Jake? And I'd say, oh, it was great. Me and the kids did this. And church on Sunday was especially, you know, nice this time. We had a great fast and testimony meeting. Oh, what's fast and testimony meeting? And there's been so many opportunities where I've been able to share about the church and tell them, you know, briefly bear my testimony about certain aspects of the gospel. And it's all just come from, you know, not hiding it and just being Mormon.
Yeah, totally owning it. Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
And Jake's really proactive in the design department, until Friday. But yeah, was never one to just sit in the corner and they would think, oh, those Mormon kids are just the scared kids in the corner of the department. But he was really just proactive and everyone loved him. And he was just a great example to the point where when I came in to the company, there was already several people who were very good examples. And so when people would find out, oh, you're Mormon. Oh, good. Well, you like Jake or like Thomas or these other guys and gals that are just great examples. So it's been very welcoming and a great rapport has been built.
I think there's a misconception in the industry, in the entertainment industry, that your religion, particularly LDS, is going to inhibit your ability to succeed, and that is a complete falsehood. I attribute all of the successes and opportunities and open doors and people that I've met to the fact that I am LDS and I am a Mormon and that I have a belief that if I put God first, then he will open those doors up for me and create those opportunities. And so it has been a huge advantage and an absolute necessity for me to rely on who I am and my religion as an LDS member and to be obviously worthy in that to enable to succeed. And it hasn't inhibited one bit.
I can't really think of a better way to gain someone's respect at a studio or somewhere than just, you know, standing by your beliefs and doing what you're supposed to be doing. I had an experience, and I had a few with these roommates that I'm living with in these internships who have a completely different lifestyle. And, you know, I think, like the example that Jake was talking about as he's been setting an example for people in the studio with him, I found that it was a lot easier for me to just, the very first time that they're all going to get drunk or going out to party, that I just simply tell them, you know, yeah, I don't do that, but I try not make them feel like they're bad for that, you know. My mom's a great example of that, is just being tolerant and loving everyone, and I've found that as I'm just myself and they
without
see
judgment,
that,
yeah,
without any judgment, they're immediately much more respectful. I mean, when I was getting married last September, and there was a big party at Pixar, and the head of story wanted me to take a beer, and I was like, oh, I don't drink, and I had like a Sprite in my hand, and he said, you know, so tell me about yourself. And I told him I was getting married, and he said, you're getting married? How old are you? You know, and I was like, well, I'm 24 right now, and he's like, well, I'll bet you $1,000 you won't be married in 10 years. And I was like, all right, but I also don't bet. but I, you know, on our anniversary this year, I sent him an email and said, hey, this is our first year. We're going strong, you know. And
he
constantly writes me back. He's been looking at the movie as I've been working on it and giving me feedback. But I feel like these experiences where we're able to show our beliefs is a really good thing. And it's also been a really good thing for things like Proposition 8, just setting things a little bit more clear, showing that we are very tolerant people and that we love the people around us and that we're not haters.
Yeah.
But it's a really good opportunity for missionary work.
Absolutely.
As well.
And just your example. Well, we are so out of time, you guys. Thank you so much. This has been fascinating, and we could probably keep talking forever. I know I've learned a lot today and appreciate your just taking time to come and talk to us and sharing so much of yourself. And we've all learned a new word today, if anything. So that was awesome.
Glad I could contribute.
So, circumcilidicious, something like
yeah.
that.
Circuitous.
So, Moroni, thank you for joining us by You're phone welcome. From Connecticut. We appreciate it. Tyler Carter, David Dibble, Ryan Woodward, and Jake Parker. I'm Nancy Hansen, and this is Everything Creative. To see pictures from today's episode, visit radio.lds.org and find this episode on the Everything Creative program page. You have been listening to an interview about creative animation and graphic design for Everything Creative on the Mormon Channel.